track session number 10768, reel 8.
John Granger, Reel 8.
Yeah.
We were talking about your time in the Somme area and the sort of routine things you did. We just, I wondered, at night, how did the sentry rota change at all at night? Were things more, was it more concentrated?
Well, it was all, you were all sentries, you see, at night, and the same as during the day. So many would be probably on stand two on the firing base, and the rest of us could probably go down and have a kip and see if we could find a dugout deep enough. Some of the dugouts were deep enough for say 3 or 4 to sleep in, and the rest were sort of trench level, and then you had to just try and get a part of the firing bay, which was off the floor, and probably have a ground sheet there, and have an hour or two there.
Would you have to go on any working parties at all when you were in the front line?
Oh no, not working parties. Only when we came out. The front, they didn't do working parties in the front line. No, yeah. The only things we did out the only thing we had was reconnaissance. Parties, and that meant that so many of you out of the one platoon, just say about 8 men, you had to go out at night across towards the trenches where the Germans were, and the object was to make sure they were as near to us as we thought they were and hadn't altered the positions for any reason. And we didn't have to do any firing. It was just making sure we could make the Germans were in the trenches that we had got knowledge of.
Well, did you ever go on one of these?
Oh yes, you only had to go out, crawl out on your belly with your rifle.
How many would go?
About eight. Sometimes as low as 4.
How would you prepare for it?
No preparation.
So you wouldn't blacken your face or anything?
Oh, no, we'd not have that bullshit. No, we were mucky enough without blackening our faces.
What weapons would you take?
Just take your rifle. Drag it over your shoulder, you see. That's all.
What was it like in No Man's Land?
Well, it was one of those sort of things. You had to go in, you were bloody glad when you got out, because you didn't know what was going to happen. But as long as you contacted the enemy, that was the expression, well then, you could come back and it was all right.
Did you ever meet any German patrols in No Man's Land?
No, they never come. But we knew they were there, we could see them come in at times, but we didn't bother. We never tried to shoot anything like that. We knew that they knew what we knew. All that was, you know, that business.
So the patrols left each other alone?
Yes. Unless, I never remember anything naughty having happened by an action between them. But, as a matter of fact, one of the best patrols I can ever remember was when we got the Flaming Yanks to us. They came to us in one place. After Patrick or something it was, and they were there and in the trenches with us, and we sent them, our officers sent them out, so many of them, on one of these routine patrols, and that was, they were instructed, all they got, what they got to do was contact Jerry. Well, they went out and they came back, and the report said, no contact, no. Couldn't find the Jerry's, there was no contact, you see. Well, of course that was our information for going over. That was what we knew then, or at least we thought we did, but those jellies must have been well back somewhere. Until we went forward in the following morning, and the whole of C Company got bloody wiped out.
Well, when was that?
That was about...
That wasn't when you were wounded, was it?
Oh, no, that was before. That was before that. Somewhere around about after the Pettit and after the Grand.
That wouldn't be the attack on Beauregard Dovecote, Miremont, would it?
Miremont?
Miremont, yeah. That was an attack on the 21st of August.
Oh, no, it was before that. No, it was about July sometime. Yeah, about July sometime. So we never sent them out anymore. Next time we got out the line into reserve, no support line, they came with us, but we didn't, they never come up with us again. They went back to ESAPs, to Medicorps Base at ESAPs. And they'd come as our supporters, you know. It was more or less, what is the word? Our reinforcements. And we had a brand new New York battalion with us, consisting of 80% niggers and Jews. This band from that way, from New York. The only thing they got was a bloody good band. Anything else?
How did you get on with the Americans? What did you think of them?
We didn't see much. That was one occasion. That would be about July. And they went back to base and we never saw them anymore. They never came up with us again. They weren't with us when I got wounded in September. They never come near us afterwards. It was what the hell they were doing down at the farm. Of course, everything was going a bit better for us at that period because we got Jerry on going this way. And we knew it, you see.
Did you ever have to do any wiring parties at night?
Oh, wow. No, well, the main action at night was the signallers. You see, everything was done with Morse code, with no, none of this, and photographers dashing round like scalded hens, taking photos for the TV. We even didn't have radio. So all the signalling and the communications had to be done with Morse code, and with the wire, you know, with the trapper. And of course it was a special signal corps, and there's always so many signals in the East Battalion. And they, when there was any bodies put over and things like that, and communications were cut, because you always tell them to cut the wire, they were all signalers could get nowhere. So they had to go out then, all of them were out. Nobody's business then, poor so-and-so. They had to start from the instrument, play the GHQ, and then tail it with by hand, you know, and go through to find out where it was broken. And if you got one end, you got to find the other bloody end, you see, and pass them up. Well, then, it might be two or three, but if you had anything like a reasonable barrage, you could have two or three breaks. But you still got to get that. They had, I wasn't a singer, but they had to do that. It was a lousy job, you know.
Were they admired, the signallers?
Admired? How do you mean?
Well, did people respect them?
Well, they were part of the army, same as we were. And they knew we were on just as perhaps a bunch of dangerous job as anybody else. They were all, it wasn't a case of any admiration, but we were all doing the one job, thank God. And eventually we were all bloody well out, or most of them.
Did the routine of life, did it cause you to get very tired?
Tired? I've stood up on my bloody feet, sound asleep, before today. Sometimes, other times, it'd be all right, it just depended. If you got perhaps 2 or 3 hours, one day, you'd make as much. You weren't really pushed for it. When you were tired, and you couldn't do anything about it. You've got to go to sleep.
What about when you were supposed to be on sentry? Because you weren't allowed to fall asleep on sentry, were you?
Oh, no. You never found anything like that, no. Those that were on sentry, they were, you know, fully okay. Yes, they were all that.
Did people's nerves cope? Did your nerves cope all right during the thing?
Oh, funny thing, I look here at this screen on the television, and I've seen American, an Australian, and other countries' soldiers that have been out, and some of them in the First War, some of them in the Second War. I've never seen such rubbish about. They're all there, stresses and bags of nerves. I never had any flaming stresses. My ambition was to do as I was told, and I'll try and do my little bit, and for God's sake, let me get home in time. That was all it was. But I never knew anybody going to arrows with stresses or strains.
Well, did you feel frightened much?
Very little. Oh, I hadn't time to feel bloody frightened. Because every night you used to get a barrage from them, and we had to put a barrage. We put one out to them, and they put one to us, you know. Between 6:30 and 8:00 or more, they were coming over practically intermittent. And they were hours ago going out the same. And one time I could hear one bugger coming over. I thought, he's not going to finish short past short of me. And I was in the trenches, and there was a corrugated iron across there. And I ducked under that as if it was going to do me any good. It was just that was me inclination, get under somewhere. And that was what it was. But they never found anybody.
You weren't aware of anybody in your battalion or company suffering with shell shock?
No, I wasn't sure. We only had one lad that he deserted. He did it twice, and he got sentenced to death, you see. We had the big court martial when we going aboard when we were out up the line. And had the whole three sides of the square and all the officers and officials there, and they stripped him of his medal. He had a medal, and they were sentenced to be shot at dawn, and we all had to go and see it, every one of us.
What happened?
Well, it's pretty much shot.
Can you remember what happened though, the procedure that
was
adopted?
Yeah. We were all right all up the hill. There was a big hill where we were all sat out on there, or stood out on there, and down below they got there like a little zip stage. And the first thing that happened was there was a chair in the middle of the stage there, and he was brought out, and he was sat on the chair, and his army disc was there, and that just dangled down there. And he must have asked about being blindfolded. Well, they did blindfold him. Well, in the firing squad, they had to take some out of his own platoon. And they took eight of them out of his own platoon to be in the firing squad. But one of them that was picked originally was his mate, and he said he refused to take part in it. So anyway, he was told if he didn't, he'd be court-martialed and got a really bad sentence, you see. Anyway, they told him, they said, you've nothing to worry about because you won't shoot him. You see, the thing was, there were eight rifles, and one had a dummy. But nobody knew, none of the eight men knew which of them I'd got the dummy old bullet. So, as the officer said, each one of you, I've got it there that you didn't shoot him. You see? And those here, matter of fact, some of them must have missed deliberately. But that was unfortunate because he just slumped forward, but he wasn't dead. Well, that's when the Provost Marshal, who's chief of the police, military police, you know, well, he had to be stood there at the side, and then if he wasn't dead from the shot, he had his revolver and he shot him, you see. And that's how he was a lad that lived not far from here, up Woodbine Street, just up to Cross Lane there.
Do you remember his name?
Yes, Jack Earl.
Jack?
How did you
feel about it? Were you sorry for him or not?
Oh, I felt really miserable because he was a friend of mine as well as others. He was a very good lad. But the trouble with him was that he deserted the once. That was when we were going back. And then later on, when we were coming forward, he pushed off again. Well, of course, you can't do that twice, not during the war.
And did he say why he'd done it to his friend?
No. I was unfortunate. At that time, I was company clerk there, and I had to send a telegram home to his people, you see. But, you see, the procedure is that if anybody was killed, they should send us this telegram, we get to inform you, your son or whatever it was, registered number so and so, killed in action. Now, with him, I had to send the telegram, all the palaver, just killed. The words in action were not in the telegram, you see. And that was for the benefit of the parents to think, to give them the satisfaction that he wasn't a coward, you see. But unfortunately for this lad, young girl, another chap lived in the same street as him, and he was this was his particular mate, the one that refused to take part in the firing squad. And when he got home on leaving, he told the young girl's parents that he'd been, you know, deserted and been shot.
How did they respond?
Well, what do you think? Well, how is bitter. Yeah. Some of the lads, when they got to knew it, they got round to the lads, to us lads, and one or two of them give this other bloke a right piling up until the bloody daylight's out of him. But that was the most horrible thing to do. They had got the satisfaction of living in their own life out and knowing that their son had got killed in the war. He was killed during the war, you see. Well, obviously everybody would think, well, he must have been in the war, you see. He was in the army and that. But then, that's how he finished. That was the only one I ever heard of where there was an absolute shooting.
Did you think that one of the reasons they did that is supposed to have been to improve morale, to sort of stop other people doing it? Do you think it was effective in doing that, you know, as an example?
Well, you see, desertion is one of the codes of the army. In all the forces, they've got different codes, haven't they, of behaviour. Well, you see, when it comes to desertion, there was only one sentence, you see. Now, he was lucky to get out of it the first time, you see, but when it comes to the second, well, he had to, and of course, to us, well, it was obvious to us. We didn't have any crying parties on his behalf or anything like that. We were very sorry for his parents, but he'd got what he asked for it, more or less.
Do you think it was an example to the rest of you, though?
Well, it was. The part that where they took us all out and we were all on the hill, the whole battalion were on parade, you see, and whether you just shut your eyes or what happened, it was up to you, but we were all there, and I think that really was as good as say, now you know. You see, that's about what it was.
And do you think it worked?
I never saw anybody else. No, so thank God, I wouldn't have liked to see another one.
Did you actually watch what happened, or did you close your eyes?
Well, I just watched it, and that was it. There was not much time, it only took about a minute or two, because it just put him there, and then this firing squad, they had a quick march, you know, and they just sort of went forward, bang, about turn, out, you see. It was all over in a matter of seconds.
What was Earl's appearance? Did he look nervous, or well, did he
I couldn't tell you, I haven't a clue. No. He was just in a shirt and his trousers, and his identification disc was there, dangling on his chest.
But you couldn't see how he was...
No, well, we were out, he's down there in the holler.
About how far away were you then?
Oh, about... Well, it was a holler, say, about half a mile in depth right through. No, it's more quarter, perhaps, or just over that.
Sure, a couple of hundred yards away.
Oh, easily, you see, and it was a big... It was like an amphitheatre in that wood. It would have been a natural one. So...
Did you hear of any self-inflicted wounds?
Oh, yes, I know myself.
What?
Self-inflicted wounds.
What were they? Could you explain?
Yeah. Well, it was, as a matter of fact, in one set of trenches where we were, there was a donkey engine at the corner of the trenches. You know, one of those big donkey engines. And this was in Everton Woods, and Jerry never bothered about it. They never hit it with a shell. And when we were in trenches against it, we never did it. And that donkey engine had a charmed life. Well, our sergeant, Tommy Gerard, he finished that for himself, you see, and it was level with the floor. It was just earth out, you see, and I used to always keep my mind with him because of my sergeant mate, you know. And when I got some sandbags, and while he was out, it was only about as big as this little PC, just enough for two of us to get in and sleep in. And I thought, well, I'll drive this out, I'll pass on these sandbags down as a floor for it. So I got all these sandbags, and I was doing very well with them, because I got live bullets, you know, and a pair of wire breakers, and I was knocking up. Well, you know, if you've got a bullet like that, and you can hit that flat like that, and it won't explode. But if you lose your temper and you turn it around like that and hit it, well, it'd come back on you. Well, I was going marvellously, so we got found one bit, and it was a bit tough, and I turned my wire breakers out, and bang, the bloody thing hit me in the face, the back of the bullet, and on the side of my nose there, about the top side of my nose, the skin was hanging off, you know. And oh, I wasn't in a very good way, but there was plenty of blood about, and some of the lads, you know, well, that was what we call a self-inflicted wound. Well, if I'd have gone to doctors with that, I'd have got CB from the CB for self-inflicted wound.
But that was an accident.
Oh yes, but I did know. Oh, there were some powers, and I remember one or two of them when we were going up somewhere. And I think it was when we were going on, I said, ground, and I said, bet it. And that was a big do. There was two of them there. And they shot the toes off, you see. And I know one fellow that shot his fingers off, and they got it. And I also know another.
Were they caught out doing that?
Well, they had to go to the doctors, hadn't they? See, so how have you done it? Out of the line, you see, it was obvious. And there was a little escapade when we came out of one place, and we went to the into support line, and when we were in support line we had to pile arms, that's piling, you know, and we all piled our arms and was looking around for, it was a bit of dry land and that, looking for a kipping path, and two lads started checking on about the rifles and that. And one said to the, he said, I could shoot your bloody finger off from 25 yards here. Up there and down, like, so I could shoot off as easy as kiss your hand. So the other fella, like a bloody mug, he took the bet up on a challenge, and he walked out and he went about 25 paces. Then he turned around, and the other fellow at this end had got the rifle, and he put it up there, you know, on his shoulder. The other fellow held his hand out like that, you see. He brought it down, wham, crash. He collapsed in the bloody, he got those two bloody fingers off. Well, they had to go down with that lot. Well, they both got CV, you see. He wouldn't get any pension for that, you know. He'd get dismissed the army, but he wouldn't get any pension. No.
What do you think discipline and morale were like generally in the company and in the battalion?
It was typical of the British Army. You had to do as you were told. Not like the stuff I saw during the Second War with the Yanks. Come over here and privates talking to colonels and calling them Cobb Jim and all this rubbish. There was none of that rubbish, no. They always had to respect rank, 100%. Yes. Rank always counted.
So it didn't relax at all in the trenches?
No, you just had to respect the officers and your seniors according to the rank.
What did you think of your officers?
We had a great lot. It's not for me any matter of to say anything at all about the British Army, particularly in the 1418 war. They lost thousands, they lost millions as a matter of fact, but the discipline was just as good as it ever will be or ever was.
So there were no discipline problems?
Nothing, no discipline at all. But as a matter of fact, when we were coming out of the trenches and we got to the road head, or the rail head, wherever we would be, but our van used to come up for meters there, and once we stuck up with a march, instead of a poor old tired sort of buggers walking, up bent the backs and the shoulders and marched up. We marched to where we were going. Oh, discipline was the great thing in the army. It was in the other forces, I should imagine, as well.
What about your own officers? What did you think of them?
They were all right, great lads.
Did you think they were competent? Were they good officers?
Well, you see, one or two of them were rankers that had been promoted on the field, and with no complaints about them at all.
Could you tell the difference between a ranker officer and a normal officer?
Oh yes, but
in what way?
Well, really, the rankers were a bit more little bit more stern, because they knew all the tricks and the other fellows had to learn them, you see. That was the difference. But together, everybody mucked in.
Did you have any preference for officers?
No, it wasn't necessary, really. No.